All right, so, Bill, today's a potpourri show.
Okay, or potpourri, as we say in Mississippi.
Is that what they say in Mississippi?
Yeah, potpourri.
So
yeah.
Potpourri, from the Latin for the smelly crushed flowers, your wife puts in a ceramic bowl on the vanity in the bathroom.
I don't think the ancient Romans had such a short word for such a long description.
Are you questioning my translation of the Latin?
I am, yeah.
But look, I went to Catholic school.
Well-known Latin
my
scholar
Latin is,
that
my
you
Latin's
are.
Pretty bad,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
But
yeah, potpourri. Potpourri.
Right. And we're doing this, of course, to give our listeners a chance to give us a call here. Oh, and there goes my computer. It's firing up.
Right,
finally.
Right. Yeah.
Finally it comes up. At 404-894-2468. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that number here, if you're listening live, noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is 404-894-2468. So we'd like today's show to be driven by the listeners.
Yeah.
Give us a call with a question or comment.
Right.
And unlike the political shows or the other shows that are on public radio, where they screen the calls, they analyze them, they deal with
them.
We're taking them live. So the answer may be the Homer Simpson answer.
Don't know. Yes.
All right. So potpourri, ladies and gentlemen, next up on Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.
Okay, astronaut, you're up. You'll be meeting with Wish Kid Brandon.
Roger, Brandon.
His wish is to see a space shuttle launch.
All systems are go. We are clear for liftoff.
This year, more than 27,000 children will be diagnosed with a life-threatening medical condition.
And cowboy?
Yes, ma'am.
You'll be meeting with Shayla at a dude ranch in San Antonio.
Let's saddle up.
Some will miss school. Some will miss time with their family and friends.
Princess, are you here?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for rescuing me from that evil witch.
Juliana wishes for a princess-themed room makeover.
That sounds magical.
But with your help, the Make-A-Wish Foundation can lift their spirits and give them a special kind of hope.
Pirate!
Yar!
You're up for Isaac's wish.
Aye, aye, Captain.
The wishes of thousands of children are waiting to come true.
You can help make my wish happen. Visit wish.org today.
The library on the radio, I told you it would work.
It does work, but we need a cool theme song.
Hit it. Lost in the Stacks is the one and only research library rock and roll show right here on WREK Atlanta.
Fridays at noon, your hosts Amit and Charlie pick a theme and free associate an hour of music, interviews, and library talk. You'll hear indie rock, pop rock, alt rock, new wave, and the occasional oddity in between interviews with students, faculty, and librarians. Whatever you tune in for, we hope you dig it.
Turn that back up.
Well, silence spreads.
The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. I'm Pete Ludovitz, and as always, I'm joined by my ever effervescent co-host, a man whose dielectric breakdown voltage is higher than the average man, Bill Hunt. Is that true?
That's because of the excessive exercise, yeah.
You get the
Well, I got the Lichtenberg pattern going on in my kidneys, so that's good. I got that going
All right,
for
so
me.
We're getting
it's the dielectric breakdown.
Even more obscure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So today's show is a potpourri show.
Or potpourri.
Right.
Yeah.
Do they really say potpourri in Mississippi?
No.
Or do you just say that?
I just say that.
Okay. All right. Very good. But today's a potpourri show, so we're going to be listener-based. Can I say that? Listener-based.
Yeah,
yeah. So if you've got a question
or
comment about
debased, that would be wrong.
Anything at all in science or technology.
Right.
And mind you, you can hit us with any question, and we may have no idea what the answer is. But it'll be an interesting response nonetheless.
Absolutely.
If you're listening to us live here noon to 1 Eastern time, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468.
And if you're one of the undead, just don't call us, okay? The whole zombie telephone call thing's not good.
I can live with that.
Okay.
But in any case, all right. So let's pick on the cheesy jokes. Dielectric breakdown voltage. Mm-hmm. Is that relevant to people? I mean, you're an electrical engineer. You know. So what is the dielectric breakdown voltage?
Yeah. So if you have a if you're walking across the carpet and you're about to touch a doorknob and it sparks, you've built up enough charge, and you could think of that as a voltage, to get this lightning bolt through the air. So you've got a certain voltage between two locations that if or the electric field is high enough, you can get current and basically ionize the air and break it down. So that's the dielectric breakdown voltage. And that's what lightning is. It's you get charge built up on clouds or the ground, and it exceeds the dielectric breakdown, and you get this big bolt of lightning. But it also happens if you're walking across the room. It happens in semiconductor devices. You have to worry about if a voltage, of 10 volts across a 1 micron difference is going to break down within the device. So, yeah, it's more of a damage mode for microelectronic devices.
Right. And I was thinking before that, you know, maybe it isn't relevant unless you're designing electronics. Until I was at the hardware store, picked up a can of wasp pesticide. You know, that stuff that shoots a foam like 30 feet to get the wasp nest so you can run away and not get stung.
Yeah, keeps white people off your lawn.
No, it has nothing to do with white Anglo-Saxon.
Okay,
that would be interesting, though.
Yeah,
I'm talking about these stinging insects.
Ah, okay.
Coming from Georgia Tech, home of the fighting yellow
and the
jackets.
The fighting boobuzelas, yeah.
We'll get to the acoustics of the boobuzela in just
a
minute.
That, yeah.
But they have the dielectric breakdown of this pesticide. It's a foam.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, well, why do they have this? And I think the reason they have this is you get a wasp's nest near some electrical wires on a high tension wire or something like that.
Right.
And basically you can shoot it at your 120 volt, even know, a 230, 240 volt thing.
Right.
Don't shoot it at a 100,000 volt high tension line coming out of a power plant.
Because the yellow jackets are going to get upset that they got electrocuted?
Well, because you'll exceed the dielectric breakdown voltage. Okay. And you could get electrocuted through this wet stream of foamy pesticide.
Yeah, that's not very... That didn't even sound fun.
Right, and this goes back to the old, I guess, the fraternity kind of science view of things.
Mm-hmm.
Never pee on the third rail in a subway.
That's something.
Did the Mythbusters
take
that on?
That's something I live by.
I think it's good advice,
I live by that, yeah.
Because, urine has a lot of salts in it,
right.
And it's a pretty good conductor.
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, would you die from that? Did we tackle this question once before?
No, I don't think we tackled this question.
And I'm not sure you would, because I think you'd just get enough voltage to really knock you against the wall, and you couldn't, you know.
Oh, the infraction points, one where I think it'd be more than knocking you against the wall, but that's just me. So
we don't know. But it would not be a good experience. And that is wise scientific advice to live by, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
So, let's begin the program, as we often do, with
Science in the News.
And today's Science in the News comes to us from the New York Times. We often reference things from the Tuesday Science Times page. Mm-hmm. This is not from the Science Times page, ladies and gentlemen. This is late-breaking news, the kind which the scientific ramifications will be felt for decades to come. Front page of the New York Times: the state of California may drop its rock, and geologists are feeling the pain. Dateline Los Angeles. Empirically speaking, geologists are not a particularly irascible group. But those who make their living studying rocks, minerals, and gems in California are increasingly, those scientists beyond the state's borders are engaged over a bill in Sacramento that would knock serpentine, the official state rock, off its mantle. So they want to get rid of serpentine as the official state rock.
Now, do we have a state rock in Georgia? Do a lot of states have a state
Georgia
rock?
Georgia does have one. I believe it's your head.
Yeah, I think you're right. No, I mean, I don't know. But I think it's odd. So they're getting rid of this because it's got asbestos in it?
It's got asbestos. It's got
California should just go ahead and slide into the ocean. I mean, if they're going to... They got so many other problems.
Okay, that's really helping our ratings with the possibility of getting syndicated here. Like, forget Cal. What is that, an eighth of the population or something like that? Or,
you know.
What do you got against California?
Nothing. Well, this is just a crazy thing to focus any attention on.
But, I mean, you know, hopefully the scientists, the geologists have pointed out later in the article that basically – And I didn't even print this out. I actually have the printed copy of this thing, which would explain why I can't read it because I forgot my reading glasses. Let's see. It is State Senator Gloria Romero proposed the serpentine bill. And it's crystallite, which is the single most common form of asbestos. It's a silicate mineral. What makes it unique is the fact that... what are you showing us here? The state of California? All right. Bill's reading. Trent has passed him a note, like study hall. And they're worried that, you know, people messing with these rocks, and they're all over California. That's why it is the state rock. Will have an issue with asbestos.
Okay.
The geologists point out that it's encapsulated inside this other silicate mineral, the serpentine rock, and they claim that unless you're pounding these things with a sledgehammer day in, day out for years and years and years,
and then snorting the powder,
it will not be an issue.
Yeah.
And that's the real problem with asbestos. There are several kinds, but it's a silicate mineral that forms a long, thin fiber. You know, in terms of the metals and the oxygen in it, it's not that much different than lots of other rocks.
Right.
But the fact that it can form this long...
Nanoparticles.
And it's bigger than an nanoparticle, but it is quite small.
Yeah.
And get into your lungs and affect things and mess with the nervous system or mess with the immune system.
So don't get a job pounding rocks.
It can cause mesothelioma.
So our crack research engineer, Trent Altman, just found the state of Georgia does not have a state rock. We've got a state gem, which is quartz, and a state mineral, which is starolite. That sounds like sterno, something you'd use to heat up.
I believe Starlight, that was your stage name back in the 70s.
Starlight was my stage name. How did you know that? Anyway, that's as close as we've got to a state rock.
But serpentine is actually used in gems. It's used as a semi-precious gemstone, so I'm not sure, you know, you can't count that.
Why don't you just get your wife a necklace, an asbestos necklace?
You know, that's the problem, gemstones look pretty, but they may not have interesting industrial properties. For example, if you take diamond, you know, it's pure carbon, everyone thinks of diamond as very, very stable. But it is unstable at the surface, right? So actually, the single most stable allotrope or form of the element carbon is graphene. And we're going to have some guys from the graphene.
And a song. Should we tease that?
Oh, yeah, we will.
Yeah, we got a song.
What's the name of the graphene song?
Just graphene? Graphene, I think.
Love it or leave it?
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get those guys on soon. But the point is the slightly less pure form of it is the graphite you buy at the hardware store to lubricate locks or lubricate your Pinewood Derby for Cub Scouts or something
like that.
But trust me, you buy your wife a 55-gallon drum of graphite, which is about what a diamond costs, you will be sleeping on the couch.
Get your fiance a graphite ring because, you know, if you tell her that it's going to decompose, the diamond ring's going to decompose to graphite eventually.
Yeah.
That won't go over well.
Portion of trillion.
She's not really, most women, even female chemists, are not into the whole Gibbs-free energy thing when it comes to an engagement ring.
Right, but that doesn't mean they're not as good at calculating that in chemistry.
No. I'm just saying.
We pointed out that before, more than 50% of the chemistry undergrads at Georgia Tech are women.
So. Absolutely.
Do we have a caller?
We have a caller. Whoa.
Maybe not.
Did we lose the caller?
Hello, caller.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, there you are.
Welcome to the program.
Yeah, starolite mineral sands are actually friable sandblast media.
All right, run that by me again.
Friable sandblast media.
So, what do you mean by friable? You can put them in a pan and
means that when you sandblast with it, it crumbles up into little bitty things with sharp edges.
Oh,
I gotta run. Enjoy.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Wow.
And what was that, starlight?
Cool. Yeah. So if you sandblast, you create starlight, and it's like got sharp edges.
Oh, that was Steve from Atlanta.
Steve from Atlanta, giving us actually a good illustration. What I guess the Pentagon likes to call dual use, right? That a lot of the technology we develop for the military also has commercial use. And if you think about it, diamond, we like, you know, big chunks of diamonds because diamonds look pretty.
Yeah.
But diamonds are also one of the hardest materials on the planet. And, you know, glass cutters and things like that.
And Steve had to go sandblast somebody.
Sandblasting and abrasion, you put them on a drill bit.
Yeah.
And now what's interesting is we've reached the point in our technology where we can recreate the pressures and temperatures under which diamonds are formed. So the idea of synthetic diamonds, particularly growing them in actually small, tiny fragments on a film or a surface of something, is what you want for abrasion. It doesn't look very good in a piece of jewelry.
Right.
And yeah, they may not be quite as perfect as some of the really nice flawless diamonds, but they are good enough so that, you know, you no longer have to take, you know, the fragments of diamonds from cutting diamonds and, you know, sort of glue them to surfaces.
Well, I think they originally thought that the semiconductors were going to have to be made out of carbon, a diamond, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was the only thing that was pure enough at the time and all this kind of stuff. So, but it turned out that, thank goodness they could make it out of sand.
No, it's out of
silicon. Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of a misnomer. When we say sand, you know, sand, we talk about silicon dioxide.
Right.
Or you can have SiO4 with a lot of counter ions and different metals. But basically, most rocks, most minerals, most gemstones are a silicon oxide with other metals in them. Carbon's a little bit different. So diamond is completely different. But all these different things, they'll just have a different balance of metal. There'll be a different arrangement of it. And that what's makes something, you know, look aquamarine or greenish. Or
is the other stuff in there.
Is a slightly greenish color as well.
Yeah, the other stuff in there, right?
Yeah, and that's the difference. The arrangement of these metals and oxygens determine whether or not it will form nice sheets that fracture, like in mica, or fibers, as in asbestos, or solid big rocks like granite or other things.
I'm getting the feeling that everything is chemistry.
Isn't that what the president of the American Chemical Society said?
Yeah, I think it is. Everything is chemistry.
Is chemistry.
Yeah.
So what is electrical engineering then? Is it
chemistry without the chemistry?
Well, but the point is, a lot of electrical engineering, at least what you do now, is chemistry. What you do is biochemistry.
Right, right. So. Well, as I say, electrical engineering spans everything from applied physics on one end at the semiconductor range of things to pure mathematics and control theory and communication. Right. So it's quite a widespread, and you usually don't realize that unless you're kind of in it.
Like you are.
It's not just, you know, knowing your CB handle and, you know, what the smoky
handle?
Is. Yeah, I don't, you know.
See, I used to have a CB handle. Don't know smoky bear
references. Well, that's what I do. That's what I bring to the program, the up-to-date cultural references. The up-to-date cultural references. Everybody goes, what in the world is he talking about?
So. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you just tuned in to Inside the Black Box and are thinking of calling the authorities, rest assured, this is a potpourri show where we're taking your calls. So we got a great one about Starlight, the official...
Yeah.
What is it? Not the gemstone.
Yeah. So do we need a rock?
Something of Florida.
Do we need
the mineral.
Mineral. Yeah. Do we need a rock? State rock.
I think we need a rock for the show.
I would recommend the Allman Brothers or REM as the state rock.
There you go. But, all right. But like I said, if you're tuning into the middle of this potpourri show, this is all driven by the listeners. Give us a call here at 404-894-2468 with any question or comment about anything in science. We are not going to guarantee we know the answer, but the response should be interesting. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468.
Can you enlighten us about the bubuzelas?
All right, so you brought up the bubuzelas. Now, is bubuzela some kind? Is an African language name for a polypropylene horn that's really obnoxious? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I think bubu is South African for or Zingali for you know, polypropylene.
Well,
a lot of ancient polymer chemists in the tribes.
But we're not shocked by this, right? Because maybe we're old enough to remember these big plastic horns,
which I could never play. One of those, by the way.
Because you didn't have the appropriate...
embouchure.
Oh, good word. Yeah, yeah. So embouchure is a $10 word for just being able to shape your mouth when you go like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right, which I can't do.
But me being a trumpet player, I was actually... I could get a lot
of
sound
out of
those.
You were good at that,
So. And there's nothing magical about these things. The whole acoustics...
But they make a different sound. I mean, I don't remember... I mean, I guess I don't...
They sound
remember
exactly
85.
Like when I used to play these dorky
really?
Games.
But I mean, I don't remember 85,000 people making this noise.
That's the difference. That funny buzz you hear in the background is thousands of people going into the end of a polypropylene horn. And together, it is really obnoxious. One or two of them, you don't mind.
85,000. I'm worried they're going to bring those for the tech football games.
It could be.
You know, yellow sounds like
a
swarm.
That's what we should start making those.
Sounds like a swarm of yellow jackets.
Quick injection molding of polypropylene.
I wouldn't want to do that. That's like you and your leisure suits. You're happy about that. I'm not. I wouldn't want to have my name on the creation of the Yellow Jacket Boo-Boo-Zayla.
Okay.
You know, that's not what I would really be interested in doing. So,
but so this is what I don't understand is if you understand the way brass instruments work and any musical instrument, right? You have some vibrating thing. In the case of brass, it's lips inside of a little metal mouthpiece,
right?
And then you simply can sort of change the pitch. But because you get a standing wave inside these tubes, so there are standing only certain ones that are allowed.
Yeah, so standing wave means basically the acoustic energy goes down and it actually sort of bounces back even though you've got an open horn.
Right. And it constructively interferes with itself.
Right.
If it destructively interferes, it's hard to hold that.
Right.
But and that's how a bugle works. Bugle has no valves to change the length of the pipe. It has no slide like in a trombone to change the length of the pipe. You only get certain harmonic pitches.
Okay.
But you only hear one pitch out of these guys. You could probably play six in the Boo-Boo-Zayla.
Okay.
And now on to a caller.
Yes, we have another caller.
Hold on.
Hold on.
We're rushing Trent.
We're rushing Trent. Sorry. Didn't mean to.
Oh, this is Zeus from Atlanta.
Zeus, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, how's it going?
What's your question?
I was talking about serpentine and different gemstones and minerals.
Right.
And I heard the gentleman say that he's an electrical engineer.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But he's no gentleman.
Say again?
But he's no gentleman.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would know better than I would.
Right, right.
I was wondering, because I make copper jewelry, right? And, you know, I've been studying a lot of, like, metaphysical stuff and, like, how the body produces all this. It produces X amount of energy, the skin, you know, a lot of it being released through the skin and salt coming through the skin. And how does that react with the copper and the gemstones? Because, like, silicon dioxide, which is quartz, is an amplifier. So if I made a ring with quartz and it has, basically, it works like a circuit. One end is on the stone and one end is attached to body. Can a person produce enough energy that it would get a reaction from quartz?
The answer is no, and I've actually got something on this. I looked up crystallite, which is the form of asbestos and serpentine, and I'm looking, this is actually a site in California talking about all these sorts of different energies and things like that. Supposedly crystallite and serpentine can be used to open up and improve the psychrometric sense. They say that it's, you know, it's got all sorts of these interesting karmic properties, but that's the one thing we as scientists can't measure. So let me ask you a question. When you say energy, what do you mean by energy?
Well, of course, it comes in different forms. We produce electric energy, like when the first thing you were talking about was walking across the room, touching the doorknob to get static electricity.
Right.
So now, with that same science and using electrical engineering, if you know copper is a conductor of energy, and to create an induction coil, I can take a piece of quartz and make an induction coil.
Yeah, a ring is kind of a nice induction coil. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. So now, and if this process, so let's say I'm walking across the carpet with this quartz induction coil, is that going to increase the electrical charge that's dispersed between me and the doorknob?
Well, it may. Everything could matter. So, I mean, whether or not you, you know, just came in from running and you're sweaty versus your skin's real dry, that'll affect how much charge.
Coated with a conductive salt.
But they also, I mean, quartz is piezoelectric, which is Greek for pressing electricity. So you can have vibrations, movement that build up charge on the surface of that, and that charge could go to the copper. So, you could actually have some sort of responsiveness to your electrical care. And we are electrical machines. I teach a course in electrophysiology, and it's just staggering how well designed we are as electrical machines.
But I think the take-home message is all these electrical and chemical responses, and you have plenty of them. I've actually met people whose perspiration can dissolve the finish off a watch, right? There are people outside the normal, slightly acidic pH balance. Most of those are so small that there isn't really a big effect. I mean, people are looking for some global kind of thing.
Well, there's not a danger, so let me put it that way. Yeah. There's not a health danger, but there is an interaction, though.
That's what I was focused on. Because I was a nerd, years ago, and I did cool for a while. But it's like now when I'm studying metaphysically, and you know, still accessing, you know, my inner nerd. It's like, well, theoretically, this should work, but it's not. It's you know, scientists aren't interested in something like that. They're worried about.
Yeah, but there. I mean, there's definitely an interaction with the motion.
Yeah.
You know, when you sweat, that's a conductive electrolyte.
Right.
I mean, we're electrical machines,
but
very much.
Most
so.
Most scientists don't believe it's a big enough effect to be associated with any, you know, mind-body metaphysics, right? So they completely dismiss that. But there is one group that is studying it, and if you read the latest Dan Brown novel, I forget what it's called, but it's the last one he did. He talks about the science of noetics, right? And I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of scientists...
You talked about that a while back.
Yeah,
noetics,
we're actually trying to get somebody from the Noetic Institute. They study this very thing, the physical connection to this metaphysical sort of stuff. Not a lot of evidence for it. I'm not sure I believe anything that they say, but here's what you want to look up. Look up the Noetic Institute. I think it's out in California.
Spell it.
Oh, N-O-E-T-I-C. I believe it's N-O-E-T-I-C. And we'll double-check that at the break. But look up the Noetic Institute, and if you find something interesting, let us know.
Yeah, but I think I would say that there's a physical interaction between everything. I mean, if you had a certain kind of clothing, you would be either more likely or less likely to build up enough charge. I mean, it could take charge off your skin.
But we don't think it's going to affect your mood.
And also, talking about earlier with chemistry, if you change the chemistry inside the body, if you have, let's say you eat and drink more things that are more acidic.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That would make your internal chemistry more acidic. So that would be producing a little bit more of a charge.
Yeah. Right.
And that can change your internal biochemistry as well.
Yeah, don't do what I did. I'm addicted to iced tea, and years ago, when I first moved to Atlanta, I was drinking like 2 gallons of really strong iced tea a day, and I went out for a run, and my white T-shirt was brown because I was sweating iced tea.
But I mean, you know,
had to back off.
Garlic comes through your pores. Physicians, they still argue about the validity of it, but physicians at least used to recommend cranberry juice and other acidic juices to get rid of certain urinary tract things.
Yeah.
And by the way, we got to take a break here, but the Noetic Institute is www.noetic.org, N-O-E-T-I-C.org. Check it out.
N-O-T-I-C-O-R-G. Thanks for the call.
All right. We've got to take a quick break here, but we'll be right back on Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.
On the Electric Boogaloo, we play funk every Thursday from 11 p.m. to midnight. What is funk? Well, if you have to ask, you should probably just tune in. See if it sort of defies description. Funk can be jazz, it can be blues, it can be R&B, it can be country, it can be gospel, it can be black, it can be white, it can be Latino, Asian, African. It spans generations, continents, and ideologies. And the Electric Boogaloo funnels it all down into a 60-minute time span each and every Thursday night from 11 p.m. to midnight, right here on 91.1 FM, WREK Atlanta, and streaming live at WREK.org.
I'm from X, and we're talking to real smokers about quitting. Tell me when you smoke and why you smoke.
First thing I do in the morning is get some coffee and have a cigarette.
If I have a cup of coffee, I gotta have a cigarette.
As soon as I wake up.
Okay.
With coffee, after I eat, and in between snacks.
Okay.
When I'm bored.
Pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
Have you tried to quit?
I quit for 3 months, went out one night, bought a pack of cigarettes, and that was the end.
I've actually tried to quit cold turkey, and that's really hard.
You ever hear about stories like, and then he threw the pack out the window, and he never smoked again?
Now, I've actually heard a guy throw a pack out the window, but he went to go buy another pack.
What would you do different?
Actually having a plan and thinking it through.
It's like you have to relearn yourself not to smoke, especially at times when you really know this is the time I have the cigarette, like in the morning after coffee.
You have to relearn how to live your life without a cigarette in your hand.
With the right plan, you can quit smoking. Free at becomeanx.org. X, a new way to think about quitting. Brought to you by X and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box. We're doing a potpourri show today, so if you're a listener and you're listening to us live noon to 1 East Coast time, give us a call here at the studio.
We should have passed out those scratch and sniff cards for the potpourri show so that people could listen, scratch,
that,
smell roast.
Give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. I want to thank Zeus, our caller before the break, who was really getting at something that a lot of people wonder about, the interface between science, physics, and metaphysics.
Right.
And that is something that, you know, most scientists will just laugh at. They'll just say, look, there really is no connection there. But you know, as you pointed out, there is a connection between chemistry and electricity in your body and all sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Clearly, your mood is affected by this stuff.
Sure.
And I've got to give them a call back. I did make a call earlier after I read Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol. That's what it's called, The Lost Symbol.
Oh, and Da Vinci Co-ed?
I believe that's the next book, actually, for release only on Cable. And
it's an HBO.
It's the science of noetics where people are trying to make that connection. And it's no different than what people tried to do decades ago on paranormal phenomena, right? I mean, because everybody claims this and that and all these connections, and if I wear the right kind of gemstone, I feel better and my karma's better and stuff like that. You can investigate that with truly rigorous scientific means. The truly rigorous scientific investigations have really produced diddly squat. That's the technical term so far.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, there haven't been some...
Well, something has. I mean, I'm certainly a big proponent that there's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
You can't say, no, there's... Now, you know, can it make you fly? Yeah, probably not, you know. But does it have some sort of effect? Sure.
So let's take an example, right? Magnets in your shoes. People are trying to get you to wear magnets in your shoes, magnets on a bracelet, all this sort of stuff.
Right.
My basic summary of that is no, because the magnetic field is so weak, the magnetic susceptibility, you know, or ability to affect the chemicals in your body really isn't going to do much.
Right.
But you put someone in a magnetic resonance imager, you've got a much bigger effect.
Right.
Who's to say, right?
Right, right. So we've got another caller.
Oh, yes, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
So,
I don't really have a question, but I'd like to change the subject and ask you about something.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, you've had a couple of shows on WREK lately. One was about the Cobb County School Board.
Right.
Right,
and one was about, which was on Inside... or Lost in the Stacks about academic freedom.
Right, that's our sister show.
Yeah. Pardon me?
No, that's our sister show, Lost in the Stacks, yeah.
Well, nobody has, in either of these shows, talked about the new Texas school board syllabus. Have you guys heard about that?
No, I don't know.
Well, not necessarily the syllabus. Are you talking about the syllabus or their tendency to rewrite the textbooks?
Yeah. Exactly what I'm talking about.
And in fact, I think the guys in Lost in the Stacks didn't talk about it specifically, but made a lot of cheesy jokes about it. So what's your question? Are you concerned about what they're doing down there?
No, he thinks it'd be a good thing to investigate.
What they're doing, and it's kind of shocking to see somebody. To see a school board, a state school board, write Thomas Jefferson out of history, and write separation of church and state out of history.
Right, and certain union organizers.
You have to mention creation. Yeah.
Why did they write Thomas Jefferson out?
Yeah.
Why?
It is believed that they are...
Well, I can't tell you why. I mean, I could speculate on that, but...
Well, it's believed
you know,
that
it wouldn't be an empirical statement.
Right, they're stressing a more conservative agenda. They're adding more pages in the history books to Ronald Reagan and less to other more progressive things, union leaders, things like that.
Yeah, we do need to look at that.
No, I, that's a great point. It's got me upset because I live in Cobb County. But since we're a science show, that's a political thing.
Well, see, you know, but that you bring up a great point, Bill, because we've been going back and forth. I want to do a show on the Citizens United case where the Supreme Court decided that a corporation spending money is...
and I've been busting his chops over this.
Is there a right, you know, and I just don't... I want to kind of get a lawyer on and break it down to how it works. Pete doesn't think it's science, which it sort of isn't, but it is sort of analytical on how do things work. How's the...
Yeah.
You know, what kind of drugs do you have to take to come up with this decision if you're on the Supreme Court? I mean, I don't see... anyway, so we may have the show anyway, and Pete may hate me for, you know, having a show
like
about
you
something.
Anyway, Bill.
Well, that's true. But this Texas school board thing sounds interesting because the, you know, if you start rewriting history, part of what you do is you sort of, you're making an attempt to protect your children from having things that are difficult to figure out at a later time. And, you know, I mean, Thomas Jefferson, you know, had slaves and this, that, and the other, and wasn't religious, but we need to look at that. So.
But that's a great suggestion.
That's another issue they're trying to ride out. They're trying to downplay slavery in the United States.
Right, right.
And pretend, so to speak, that maybe that didn't happen, or maybe we shouldn't attention to that.
Well, I mean, the other thing, and we'll get to go into the next caller, but I've recently been reading the Constitution, and the oath that the president has to give does not say, so help me God, at the end of it. That's not in the Constitution.
Right. I just say that every time I see you in the morning.
So help me God, yeah.
But thank you. That's a great suggestion. What we will try to do
thanks
is look
Bill.
At the science aspect of what's happening in Texas.
Yeah, that's great.
But thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
We got another caller. We have another. Yes. Ryan.
Hello.
Ryan.
Hi.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I guess I just kind of had a question about you guys' stance on emergent like an emergent perspective on science versus the reductionist perspective. Does that make sense?
Now, what's the reductionist perspective?
I believe
that's like the like typical past, you know, scientific endeavors and the way it's been working.
So there was a book written, and I forget the author, and we'll look that up in just a second, called The Death of Science. And it was written by a science writer. I read part of it, and then I finally put it down because I didn't think it was necessarily a truthful book. But it, what it really was is saying it's the death of the reductionist view of science. That,
right.
You know, we keep going smaller and smaller and smaller, and we've gotten to, you know, the standard model of subatomic particles and things like that. And what I think he's saying is that thing, I don't think it's died, by the way, I think it's just slowed down, has been replaced by using this more emergent method where we now look at the interplay of all these small systems. And we look at things like biotechnology and bioengineering and look at complex systems, things like that. Is that what you mean
right.
when you say emergent?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I just think this is a short-term trend. So these people that say we're fundamentally changing, that's not true. What's happening is scientists or applied scientists, like Bill and I, engineers, we use whatever we can use to find something interesting out. So for a long, long time, you know, after relativity and quantum mechanics, and we saw applications of that in semiconductor theory, like
right.
Bill mentioned, we were in this reductionist mode. Then when my friends in Texas got the large collider canceled there, everybody
right.
was upset, and people were thinking, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. Then we realized, wow, we know so much about the basic chemistry and physics, we can now start putting together complex models about, you know, biotechnology. The best example is cancer, right? 30 years ago, we thought cancer was this weird mystery sort of thing. Now we understand things about prions and the cell
and
death.
There's, and a lot that is not understood. So.
Yeah, but we understand it interacts with your immune system. We understand it can be connected to bacteria, such
right.
as Helicobacter pylori, viruses such as the human papillomavirus, and even things like immature T cells, like the Langerhans cells under your skin, they think they might be able to stimulate those. So the emergent is happening, but now that we have the Large Hadron Collider, and we might be tackling string theory, I think we're back in the reductionist mode. So I think that's a myth to say we're in reductionist versus emergent. We use whatever we're able to use given the tools we have.
When I think also the you know the press will come out with an idea that we're not doing this anymore. We're just doing this. The other's still there. It's on balance.
Yeah.
What's
you're right.
maybe
they go
the
back and forth.
Predominant voice, but you'll still have people that they're. Passion is about the science of breaking things down, figuring out how it works and all that.
The
and there are other people
pieces.
On the applied end of things like us that looks at how can they interplay, how can you use it.
In complex systems,
you know, and
right.
they're both still there. They're both going to be there. So
right.
Right, yeah. I tend to agree with both of your opinions on that.
Well, that's rare, but we appreciate it.
Well, sorry. Well, what would you say... has more practical application. I mean, I feel like what you're saying, though, is that, like, say we you know, were able to tie in string theory and all that stuff and, like, have a comprehensive theory about it, I feel like that would lead to way more practical applications than, you know, something that's further down the chain of, like, fundamental nature,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Well, that's true because I remember a... professor I had as an undergraduate at Alabama, Daniel Hollis, who's my mentor, really, you know, quarks had just been discovered. He said, we'll have to find a way to use those in engineering. That was 1976. I don't think we're using quarks yet. So, I mean, some of these things, you know, they, like lasers, actually Einstein wrote the equations to describe that process in, I think, the 1920s. And it wasn't until the 1960s that we had the device, the laser, and now it's ubiquitous. So you never can tell what the time delay is, but sometimes it's an enormous amount of time.
Many, many decades.
And some things aren't practical to be reduced to practice, so to speak, and other things are. And I don't think there's any way to predict what's going to work out for a device or invention, what's not. I don't think we ought to close the door on basic science, but then you don't spend 100% of the GNP on it either.
It's a balance. Right. And a lot of people disagree with you. Companies, for example, they're more interested in practical applications. They care more about the practical emergent stuff. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, look, we shouldn't put a lot into the fundamental stuff. But most of the emergent stuff came from some fundamental discovery. And not all, you know, reductionist things deal with quarks. They deal with the basic building blocks of how things interact.
Right.
And that's mainly fundamental research. Mm-hmm. So you got to have some of it, and we used to have a lot more in this country.
Right,
so.
And we need more of it. We need more of it, for sure.
I agree.
All right, thanks for the call, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that was a very good point. Well, did we cover the point?
I had a question from a caller about passage of time.
In fact,
so tell us, Trent, what the question was.
The question was, when you're a child, it perceived as a time going by slower, and when you're older, it perceives as a time going by faster. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Is there a scientific reason for that? And if when you're older, is there a way to make it slow down?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've thought about this, not, you know, like scientifically or whatever, but, yeah, if you're five, you know, or the year, you know, you're a year around the time that you're five, that's 20% of your life to that point. So 1 year will seem like a huge fraction of your life, which it is. And when you're 30, 20% is 6 years. So you kind of, and I don't know if they equal out. I don't know if 6 years around the time that you're 30, so like 27 to 33 seems like an incredibly long time. And then, you know, scale it up when you're 50, 20% is 10 years. I mean, I don't really know, you know, even how you would measure your perception of the passage of time.
And I think the caller had said he'd heard an explanation from some scientist, but he didn't remember who it was, and I don't know who it is either. So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what scientists do. Rather than just doing what Bill does, I think it's,
well, that's a good hypothesis, but...
But how would you test it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
But don't you think part of it's the fact that your activities are just different? When you're a kid, you get up and you're like, hey, you know, you do. Like the summer. Let's pick the summer. In the summer, I love summers as a kid. Mm-hmm. You get up. You know, you have some sugary cereal for breakfast. You run out the door. You're playing with your friends all day.
Yeah, in your case, you know, string up some small rodents and
I was never a distracted
child. And put leisure suits on them. I mean, you know, you had
I also don't remember planning things when I was little. Like, I wouldn't plan ahead 6 months
but
or something. Now,
right.
What's your plan? I don't know.
You're already 7 hours
behind.
Lunch?
Yeah.
Right? I'm three days behind when I get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. So... it just seems like there's never enough time to get... Is it because you do more when you're older? Maybe it's simply an activity density theory. That's what I'm calling it.
Well, I think, you know, part of it, as an adult, there's so much more multitasking that we all have to do. Yeah. So many zillion different things, you know, you got to remember to do. And so there's less sort of peaceful time, if you will, or totally, you know, on your own discretion. But I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't have a precise... answer, but certainly, you know, 1 year when you're five sort of might be equivalent in some respects just from a percentage of your life to 6 years when you're 30. But,
okay, but you're still measuring your life in dog years, though, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, some of them were dog years. I don't want to say which ones those were, but you know, back in my youth before
family. All right.
Family,
as you can tell by the rigorous scientific scrutiny you're hearing on Inside the Black
Box,
ladies
and
gentlemen.
We're
going to take a break in a second, but we're doing a potpourri show. So when we come back from the break, if you've got a question or a comment about anything in science.
Yeah, scratch and sniff and come right back.
Give us a call at 404-894-2468. We'll be right back on Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.
What if you didn't care about being on the fast track? What if you decided to help someone else get ahead? What if your fast track was the road less traveled? Peace Corps, life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
It's not hard to find the best reggae that Atlanta has to offer. Know your roots. Keep it simple. Tune in to 5446, Thursdays from 8 to 9 p.m., only on WREK Atlanta.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier, where we're doing a potpourri show with questions and comments from our callers.
Yep, so we have
our caller. Andrew.
Andrew, welcome to the program.
Howdy. Good to be on the show, you guys. I love the show.
Oh, thank you.
As much as I can. I wanted to make a point. I think I'm going to make a point about what we were just talking about with the time dilation.
Okay, yeah.
I'm getting older, too, so I feel it. But I believe I actually read an article about what you've been talking about. And if I remember correctly, the study was done. They did really try to quantify things by taking a large random sample of individuals and asking them to estimate the passage of 1 minute or 5 minutes or something.
That's a good controlled experiment. Yeah.
Yeah. Saying, all right, I'm going to say go. And when you think 60 seconds has passed, I want you to say now. And so they did that. And there was some correlation between the older a person was and the longer it took them to say stop, meaning,
The time.
When an older person thinks 60 seconds has passed, actually it was 65 seconds. And when a younger person thinks 60 seconds have passed, it really just been 55 seconds.
Huh. Interesting.
That's what I remember vaguely from that study. But at the same time, it wasn't a huge, if I remember correctly, it wasn't like kids said stop after 30 seconds and old folks would sit there for 10 minutes before they realized a minute.
Right.
It wasn't a real severe thing. So I just wanted to throw that in there. I think that's the study that was being discussed.
Well, that's good because, I mean, that's, you can...
That's a good experiment, actually.
Basically do what I was saying. I was like, whoa, it seems longer, but that's not really...
Well, I guess it seems opposite of what the other car was saying, where it's slower when you're a child, but faster when you're an adult.
It's right. The 55 seconds, that feels like a minute to you because you're younger.
Right, so you save 55.
And then, 65 seconds because you're older because, it seemed like time, but it's actually a longer amount of time. So, thanks. But, I think some of these questions you could certainly do research and get an answer to, but you got to be careful about how you're going to measure it and measure something, I think we've all kind of experienced that, I'm 55 and my kids are growing up and all this other kind of stuff. And it just seems like, 10 years ago was yesterday.
Yeah.
Did
the study say why there was that observed difference?
What I remember, I don't think there was a clear explanation for it. It was just,
that's the hard part.
This is what we've observed. Mm-hmm. And it seems to go along with sort of the general knowledge that old people complain about. But, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there was a real explanation for why it was happening.
Yeah, interesting data, though.
Yeah,
great.
Thanks for bringing up the study.
All right, thanks for the call.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
But see, that is the problem, right? When you look at science and what you're going to do research on, if you're trying to figure out a way to make computers faster in semiconductor theory.
We know how to do that.
That's that's valid research. We ought to be doing research on that. Right. That's funded by the National Science Foundation and mm-hmm. the Department of Energy and sorts of stuff like that. And companies. Right. Companies fund mm-hmm. that. But then if you look at things like, you know, does time pass slower or faster? I mean, mm-hmm. who was our guest from the Center for Disease Control that talked about the spread of venereal disease in the locus around New Orleans?
Ladon.
In any case, mm-hmm. I mean, people would say, well, why do you care mm-hmm. about that? I mean, right. and the point is, well, if you have big natural disasters where suddenly lots of workmen mm-hmm. come in to rebuild stuff, right. you don't want venereal diseases spreading yeah. around. It's like icky. Nobody wants to deal with
that. But you can measure it. But there's
an interesting question.
When it's a measurable thing and you've got some data about it, you can say something about how people's behavior has changed in those situations, and that's information. Right. But if you just, you know, sling it out there like Fox News, then who knows what's really going on.
Okay. So he's picking on on the media.
And you are a big fan of that since you live in Cobb County.
Sling it out there, right? Uh-huh. And we could probably fit in another question, though. So we are doing a potpourri mm-hmm. show here on Inside the Black Box. So if you've got a question or comment about any area of science,
or a suggestion for a future show, call us at 404-894-2468.
And that's the most dangerous thing, the sling it out there. And too many mm-hmm. people sling it out there. In fact, right now what we're doing is we're slinging it out there. So let me give you the disclaimer.
Yeah, but at least we're admitting that we're winging it. We're not.
It's
we're
like
not,
with the study with the time and the kids and the uh-huh. adults. It's they said they don't know. They didn't come to a claim and use that data to back it up.
Right,
right.
They're saying we're not really sure because
we don't know what this means.
But that's the easiest kind of empirical study to do, is that you measure this as a function of this and you see, is there a correlation? And sometimes it's marginal. Sometimes it's clearly none. And sometimes it's, yes, there's a big correlation. Mm-hmm. Then when you get the big correlation, you got to figure out why. Mm-hmm. What's the causality?
Right.
That's really the hard part.
Right.
So,
right.
No, but it is important. I mean, I guess the problem is everybody picks on everybody's area of research, right? So physical scientists say, well, because you're a mellow human being who doesn't? And I'm either. But, you know, so I work with Richard Catrambone in psychology. And I hear that is a gateway drug to, you know, the essential oils with the reed diffusers.
Yeah, that's, and the rose.
Gateway drug to what? Smelling good?
For Bill, that would be a step forward.
Smell good on the inside that way, you know.
But I work with Richard Catrambone over in psychology, and, you know, maybe the physical scientists pick on the engineers as selling out because we're applied, and maybe we pick on the psychologists to say, who cares if the role of whatever, environment, humor, whatever it is in the workplace changes things or changes your educational predisposition. But to be honest, if you can find something that's not obvious that will help people learn better, work better, and they've done lots of those studies, right?
Yeah.
So still, many companies have the sort of the mildew-yellowed cubicles and the fluorescent lighting. I don't think is all that good for people, but it's cheap and inefficient, cheap and efficient. So,
well, I mean, I think
that is important.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem I have, you're talking about us as engineers casting dispersions on people in the softer sciences,
but we don't though. We don't.
No, but I mean, you know, I've got a problem with public policy being acted based on we really don't know. You know, it's about if you got something about education or this Texas school board thing, you go, well, we're just going to cut out history we don't want them to hear about, and we're not going to worry about the consequences, and we haven't researched this really, so we're just going to go ahead with this. I mean, there are a lot of things like that where public policy is set on faulty science that's really not concluded. You know, you don't have a conclusive point of view, and yet you charge out there and try to change the way things work.
So to that end, our own Robert Butera, who was a Jefferson Fellow, you know Rob.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So
Is
he an electrical?
He is an electrical, yes.
Right, and he also does work in bioengineering.
Electrophysiology.
He was a Jefferson Fellow, and I was just having a chat with him on my way here. We're trying to get him on the show to talk about
his
experience.
So we're
going
to have to change Jefferson Fellow to something else in Texas. It wouldn't be a Jefferson Fellow anymore.
Yeah, I guess
he's
being pushed
out of fellow.
That. Yeah, so he'd just be a fellow.
Okay.
But Jefferson Fellows are technical people, scientists and engineers, who advise the government. And they go there and they do this sort of thing. And I've talked to him about coming on. And he told me his conclusion was, well, first of all, he was in an area of sort of physiology on national, you know, homeland security type stuff. I'm oversimplifying it. And he said the threshold for an expert in the government is relatively low. He did say that because he was asked to advise on certain things that aren't exactly what he's doing. But he did say, in general, the process is not unreasonable that they do logically interpret reasonable available science to make a policy decision. And that doesn't mean you're not going to make a bad policy decision.
Right.
Because the interpretation, as we talked about before the show with the Constitution,
right.
very subtle. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that. So maybe it's not as bad as you think. But other people, as you say, sling it out there and try to paint it as fact.
We should research that because I'm not necessarily talking about the government thinks consciously and does something and makes a policy, but more like the mob hysteria of, you know, the Texas school board. Oh, let's get rid of, you know, discussion of Jefferson. Well, huh?
It happens with computer stuff a lot too, like where Congress decides the president needs the power to shut off the internet for like a month or...
It does?
Or...
Wow.
I don't know if it currently... They were trying to pass through a bill for... it was because they're considering the internet... like national infrastructure, so if the president needed an emergency to turn it off, there was apparently some off button or something like that.
And does he have that now?
I don't know. I don't know if that went through.
As a computer guy, what do you think of that?
So it's always, when they say things like that, it's always the implementation that's the issue. Like when you're dealing with, like, what does it mean to turn the internet off? The United States can't turn the internet off for like the rest of the world or anything.
No.
They can like break their egress points or something, but
but we could basically turn off all our domain names.
And when you include all the satellites and all that stuff, I don't know. It seems like a weird thing. It seems like the wrong solution to some problems.
Right.
So that's things like,
that's a good
example. Yeah, it's just like, we need this to solve this. We have this problem and we need to do this to solve it.
May not be the right solution.
But that's not the right solution.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in engineering, I would say that the biggest challenge or the most important part of any process is to find out what the problem is, what the real problem is, and then figuring out a solution that's the... most cost-effective solution for that particular problem.
And the answer is what all good science should do is be totally and brutally honest about this stuff.
Right.
So the problem with the Texas textbook thing is that they're not being honest about it.
No.
I mean, that you have to, explore all sides. And, and so me being sort of the hippie liberal guy, not a huge fan of Ronald Reagan. As a person, actually, I hear he's a very nice guy. But policy, I don't agree with
him. I heard he was dead. But
but in any case, for example, the arms for hostages, right? I mean, you know, a lot of liberals, this is way back, you know. Ollie North,
right.
But if you think about it, the logic is that, if your child were kidnapped and you had the possibility of doing a marginally legal deal behind the back of the police to get your kid back, would you risk prison for it? You just might.
Yeah.
Right? I'm being logical.
Well, my kids are teenagers right now, so maybe that's a bad example.
Take them. Here's $50. Go. I don't know. Something like that.
Don't bring it back. Yeah, no,
all right. So we've reached the end of the program and the section we like to call What Have We Learned? So what have we learned? Well,
we got some smart listeners out there.
We do. That's what we learned. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for the callers.
Right.
We think that's great. I mean, a lot of people give us a hard time saying, well, you're down here in Georgia, you're not getting a lot of smart college. We've got nothing
but tons of them. Nothing
intelligent college. So what have we learned? We've learned that Georgia does not have a state rock, but it does have a state mineral, Starlight, which also has an industrial use as an abrasive, as does things like diamond, which is why we make synthetic diamond, and that's really neat stuff at all. Our caller Zeus talked about the connection between physics and metaphysics, which nobody really wants to touch, certainly in the scientific community.
Right.
But, you know, this is something we've debated about for a long time, haven't seen a lot of clear scientific evidence for it, but there are folks out at the Noetic Institutes who are at least trying to look at it, and I don't think you can fault them for trying to look at that sort of thing.
Right.
I don't think we really know why time passes more quickly when you're older.
No.
But Bill just tacks that up to being old. Is that the deal?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting, you know, you certainly see it, you certainly feel it the older you get, but exactly what's going on is hard to say.
Right, and
we should look into it more.
This balance between reductionist and emergent things, where you look at the basic fundamentals out of which the emergent technology comes, or the emergent technology. These are artificial delineations that you use what you can, and they go back and forth, from time to time. And I think we also agreed that, like I said, the connection between physics and metaphysics is tough. So is applied science and policy.
Right.
But hopefully, we're going to get Rob Butera from Georgia Tech. To come on and talk about his experiences as a Jefferson Fellow. Who else did we miss? Did we miss something else? I'm sure we did.
I don't remember.
Probably. I think that's it.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for all the callers.
Thanks thanks for joining us here on Inside the Black Box. Our chief engineer is Trent Altman. Our theme music is performed and authored by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.